for Bitcoin to hit 600,000 in US dollar terms, that's just the equivalent of gold. Every time in history, a digital successor has gone after an analog predecessor, it hasn't equaled it. It's like crushed it. Whether you think of like automobiles versus, you know, like horse and buggies, or mobile phones versus rotary phones, this is Bitcoin versus analog gold, right? Yeah. So, okay, let's get to 600,000 of Bitcoin, right? And then let's see what happens. If it goes to 10x that, right? And we're at 6 million of Bitcoin, these other things are going to take care of themselves. We don't need to fight those battles now. Let's just fight the battle of being a digital gold.
This is the Freedom Footprint Show, a Bitcoin philosophy show with Knut Svanholm and me, Luke DeWolf.
And we love to expand our freedom footprint. We hope you do too. The best way to do that is, of course, to emit as much freedom dioxide as possible. The best tool we have for doing that is, of course, Bitcoin.
Before we dive into today's show, we'd just like to tell you a little bit about how you can support us. First, to support us directly with Bitcoin, visit our Geyser page at geyser.fund/project/freedom. Or you can send us sats directly to freedom@geyser.fund. You can also support us as you listen by listening to the podcast on Fountain. The app is available on Apple and Android, and you can stream sats or send a boost. It's the easiest way to support the show just by listening normally.
And if you don't care too much about Luke, you can always visit knutsvanholm.com, where you can buy my fabulous wine, my books, and a t-shirt or two. And if you don't feel like supporting your fellow Bitcoiners at all, at least like, subscribe, and brush your teeth.
But seriously, that stuff actually helps. It would be great if you could subscribe to the YouTube channel, like the videos, send us a comment, or leave us a review. All this stuff really helps the show, seriously.
Click the damn bell. So thanks for tuning into the show, and we hope you enjoyed today's episode. Eric, welcome to the Freedom Footprint Show, and welcome to Madeira.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's great to be here. It's quite a venue.
You got in yesterday night, I guess? Or yesterday morning.
Yeah, red eye.
How scary was the landing?
It was actually pretty scary. There was quite a crosswind, and we made it in one approach. We didn't have to pull up. I was speaking to someone last night, and they had to take three approaches before they landed. But it was a little scary. Those wings are getting pretty close to the runway, and I've never landed on a runway that was supported by like cement pylons that's hanging out over the ocean. That's pretty scary. Now I know why it's the second most dangerous airport in the world.
Yeah, that statistic, though, is according to Andre, at least, it's slightly off, because that was from
before they extended it. Great. Yeah.
And I was here once with a small sailboat, and we anchored just down from the edge of those
Of
the runway and the pylons. So we saw the planes like lifting off, taking off above our mast and everything.
That's wild.
That's pretty wild.
Apparently now underneath the runway, they have like go-karts that you can.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So maybe we'll check that out.
That is pretty cool. Yeah. For our listeners that don't know you, can you tell them a little about yourself? And
yeah.
Quick TLDR.
Yeah. The TLDR is started out in traditional finance, and discovered Bitcoin in 2013, bought my first Bitcoin at the end of 2013, started a Bitcoin fund called Bitcoin Investment Group for people who are more used to more traditional investing, high net worth individuals and family office types to invest in Bitcoin. Opening an account at Coinbase wasn't something that was comfortable to them. There was no publicly traded products at the time. And so I started a fund that allowed people to invest dollars in Bitcoin, and they can leave and get back dollars, but we're also the only fund that will actually send them Bitcoin when they're ready to self-custody as well, and charge like very low fees, 1% a year, which includes the custody at Fidelity Digital Assets. And it's a simple little straightforward vehicle. And it's got, you know, decent amount of capital has flowed in, and a lot of people got into Bitcoin like way before the ETF. So it was great.
Yeah.
some happy limited partners.
So what do you, speaking of the ETFs, what do you think this will do to the, do you think we've seen even the beginning of what that's going to do?
I was always in the camp very vocally that this was a really big deal, and people were saying, nah, it's all hype. All the money's come in. It's going to be a sell the news kind of situation. And I was very much, having worked on Wall Street my whole life, not in that camp. The truth of the matter is the money of the world is in Wall Street.
Yeah.
And until you open up the window for them to invest and it gets blessed by the powers that need to bless it, it's just the capital's not going to come in. And so there's this tidal wave of money, and we've just seen the first kind of splashes of this coming in. I know that some of the bigger firms like BlackRock and Fidelity, they haven't even unleashed like 25% of their distribution capabilities yet. This is mostly a retail wave of investors.
No.
Institutional investors have way more constraints. For example, they can't be more than 5% of daily volume. They can't be. So even if you're trading $1 billion, that's 50 million that they could do. And for the pension funds and endowment funds of the world, that doesn't even register. And the other thing is they don't take risks. They want to see how the ETFs play out, how well they track Bitcoin, which one, if any, are better than the other before they make their move. And to us, the retail investor, there may be a really big difference between 40,000, 60,000, and 100,000. To the institutional investor in this pool of, you know, many, many, many billions of dollars of capital, there's no difference. They don't care about allocating. It's not a, oh, we got to get in, it's 60,000 versus 120,000. They genuinely do not care. So they're happy to take their time and wait, which is great for us because there's plenty more capital to come.
Yeah, and most of them are using the same custodian, right?
A lot of them are using Coinbase. Fidelity is obviously not. I think Fidelity is probably the safest custodian in the United States. They're custodying themselves. The other thing that's really big about the ETFs is not just the flow of funds and what it does for price. What's really big is from a regulatory and legal standpoint in the United States, this can never go back now. Bitcoin is now, through the ETFs, in the hands of endowment funds, pension funds, retirement accounts.
Yeah.
So whether the next chairman of the SEC or whether the next president of the United States is against Bitcoin or not, it doesn't matter. They can't take it away from the people now. And that's the really big thing. We've crossed this massive chasm. And interestingly, right, it's only Bitcoin that has crossed this chasm. It's not any of the other tokens or coins.
No. And rightly so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just fascinating to think about. Like, the way I visualize it is it's really this immovable object meet unstoppable force.
Correct.
That's the supply-demand curve. That's the cross point, like the crosshairs.
Yeah,
but one thing is more unstoppable than the other, though, right? Can't stop that supply.
No,
supply
no.
is capped.
Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah, we're getting a real supply shock and a demand shock right now. And people don't fully understand it. And it's going to get worse with the halving, right?
Yeah.
So people just really don't quite understand, the dynamic. We've seen a little bit of it in the last month or last 72 hours even, where it seems to go parabolic.
Yeah.
But it could be significantly more dramatic. We could even see 50 to 100% in one day. Because when the Bitcoin lands in strong hands, and there's traders and there are people who live their lives in fiat and they have goals and objectives for their life to buy a house, buy a car, whatever it is, and they will have a number in US dollar terms in their mind where they're going to sell. But generally speaking, there are a lot of people like the three of us or Michael or others or MicroStrategy that just like aren't going to sell. That's most people are just not going to sell. Like, you'll pry it from my dead hands, right?
Yeah.
So there's just very little supply. Factor in all that's been lost, you know, whatever, 4 million or so. And we're going to reach a point where you've got, you know, someone wants to buy 1,000 Bitcoin of demand and there's 500 Bitcoin of supply. And the price is just going to go up very, very dramatically, very quickly.
You think that these last days, little hint of a bull run is the start of that?
Yes and no. We're getting a glimpse. But also, you know, there are traders out there. So there are plenty of people who came in at 51,000 less than a month ago.
Yeah.
And they're at 61,000 now. And that's a big gain. And there will be no shortage of people who are going to take those profits.
No.
So that's going to generate sellers for us. The other thing that we have kind of helping us is as the US dollar price goes up, it takes less Bitcoin to meet the demand. So, right, it's like if you have $100,000 come in and at 50,000, they could have satisfied it with two Bitcoin, you know, price of Bitcoin doubles and now they only need one Bitcoin to satisfy that same demand.
So do you see a risk with these ETFs, like the not your keys, not your coins, right? So like that, not only is owning a Bitcoin ETF not only owning Bitcoin, but it's also like if the ETFs themselves are using a custodian service? Like, do you see a risk with that, that so many of the Bitcoins are going to end up in a sort of far thing?
Personally, I don't. I understand the conceptual risk.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's a legitimate concern, certainly not in the United States at this point. And if that were to become a concern, I don't think it happens overnight. There's plenty of foreshadowing. There's discussions in Congress. You know, there's a lot of smoke before there's fire. And if that were to be a situation and people want a Bitcoin, they would sell their ETFs and buy Bitcoin and take custody of their Bitcoin in a more direct way. I really don't think it's a concern.
Yeah, I think we should, as Bitcoiners, encourage that always, though, like self-custody.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, I think self-custody, we don't have the killer app for self-custody yet, in my opinion. It's still too complicated, may not be the right word, but it's still too, in some ways, it presents more risk and more hassle. And a lot of people don't want, I mean, I have some good friends in the self-custody world, right? Who like make the hardware wallets, et cetera. Right? And I have looked into it extensively. I understand it fairly well, and it's not for me. I'm still more comfortable having my Bitcoin custody at Fidelity. So, you know, when they have this killer app that makes it super easy and safe in a multi-sig way, and it's like it's a simple user interface, and I'm not worried about if something happens to me, what happens to my custody, and all these fail safes, or if I forget my PIN, all kinds of stuff. Like there will be more mass adoption, but we're not there yet. I was with the folks, one of the founders of Trezor, when we were in Prague at dinner, and by his numbers, 2% of people self-custody.
Is that low?
It's that low.
Oh, holy. I mean, the thing with the simple UXs and everything and convenience is that the trade-off is always there.
Correct.
Like, so we might never see a killer app for self-custody. Like, do you think such an app even exists?
I think it will. I think it will. I think it'll happen in the next, you know, 12 to 24 months. I think we're going to see great strides in that area.
In the next 12 to 24 words.
Yeah, exactly. Coincidence? Yeah, exactly. I think we will.
Yeah, there's so much. I think that's that whole area of money now being nothing but information, and provably so. So it's so unexplored. Like this whole notion of, you know, 12 words, 12 magic words.
It's a mind-bending
so
concept.
Powerful.
Yes. Like,
it's
and there's virtually
everything.
No chance explaining that to someone over a certain age.
No, they can't get it.
Can't get it, don't want to get it. And in a lot of cases, their livelihood depends on them not getting it.
Yeah. And that's the, what was it, Upton Sinclair quote?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's really good. It's a very, very hard to grasp something if your salary depends on not understanding
it. That's exactly right.
And all the boomers that actually do understand Bitcoin, they're all here.
A good number of them. It's quite a turnout.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is, I mean, that's one thing that Wall Street does. And don't underestimate the benefit of the two largest asset management firms in the world, BlackRock and Fidelity, with their credibility, right? Nobody has more credibility than, Larry Fink or Abigail Johnson, right? They're not only the CEOs of their respective companies, they are the founder in Larry's case and the heir in Abigail's case. And so they can have the courage to do something bold like this. Whereas the CEO of Vanguard, right, serves at the pleasure of his board, and it's a job. Granted, he was in it for a long time, but, you know, there's risk to that person. You know, it's their job. They serve at the pleasure of the board, and they can be fired. He just resigned yesterday, or announced that he was going to resign. Whether or not that's coincidence or not, who knows? But, you know, I can imagine that his perspective was, yeah, this may be coming, but not on my watch.
Yeah.
And he knew that he was leaving soon or something, and, you know, just kicked it down the road a little bit, and now he's gone, and now we'll have another bite at the apple. And maybe the next CEO embraces Bitcoin, and maybe not. But the benefit of having the BlackRocks and Fidelities doing this is they will educate their consumer in a credible and very effective way. I mean, some of BlackRock's marketing materials, I don't know if you've seen them, they're excellent. So, you know, the plebs, we all create stuff and put it out there, and it's on X or Twitter or whatever. But when the BlackRocks and Fidelities of the world go to sell something and explain something, they're excellent.
Yeah, yeah. But don't sell your Bitcoin to BlackRock. Like, that's a pro tip of the
day. Don't sell your Bitcoin to anyone.
No, don't even sell it to MicroStrategy. Like,
correct. Don't sell it to
don't
me.
Don't sell it.
Yeah.
You don't sell your Bitcoin. That was the phrase, right?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, seller will say that as many times as he can.
But you can trade it for goods and services, right? Eventually. What do you think about that?
No.
No.
No, okay. That's uh-oh. There's no difference between trading it for goods and services and selling it, in my opinion.
Oh.
You can borrow against your Bitcoin and then repay the loan and keep your Bitcoin in exchange for those goods and services or whatever you want. But no, I'm not inclined to sell my Bitcoin for goods and services.
What about in the scenario, though, when everyone is completely hyper-Bitcoinized, right? I mean, maybe that's not in any of our lifetimes, but when everything is only Bitcoin, then it's just got to move around for costs and stuff. What do you think about that?
Oh, I'm all in favor of the movement of Bitcoin. I might, you know, in some scenarios, lend my Bitcoin out to earn interest on it if there's a way to make sure there was no real counterparty risk or something like that. I'm not at all opposed to the movement of Bitcoin. I'm just not going to be parting with any of my Bitcoin.
That's a good way of putting it. Like, play the fiat games until fiat disappears, right, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of fiats will disappear. I don't think fiat is going to disappear. I actually think that Bitcoin is really good for the US dollar. And I think there can be plenty of nation states with fiat currencies that can make their fiat survive by backing it with Bitcoin. So I think fiat is necessary and will exist. I'm just grateful.
Forever?
Potentially, yeah. I don't see any reason for the US dollar or euro or Chinese yuan to go away. I think the weaker fiats will go away. But as a medium of exchange, I think they serve a valuable purpose.
Interesting.
Can you explain how it's good for the US dollar specifically?
Sure. I mean, first of all, it's good for Bitcoin that their fiat currencies exist. To the extent that you start viewing Bitcoin in opposition to fiat currencies, you create the single most powerful enemies in the world. And as great as we're feeling about Bitcoin right now, as a $1 trillion asset, if China and the United States were to get together and decided they wanted Bitcoin to go away, it will go away. Okay, so, you know, let's see. We are as unstoppable as we can be, but we are stoppable, right? And to some degree.
Really?
Yes, really.
Oh, this is fun because I think this is where we might disagree. I think we may be stoppable for 1,000 years, but I think we come back
after that. Correct. Perhaps my view was a little shorter than yours.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm maybe selfishly slightly more concerned about my lifetime than post 1,000 years. But, you know, known history is what, like a few thousand years. So, you know, in 5,000 years, you know, like Marcus Aurelius, soon you will have forgotten all and all will have forgotten you. So, you know, I'm not sure anyone from, you know, our civilization will be remembered in 5,000 years.
Probably not. And the question is, will any private key be remembered in 5,000 years? Because that's sort of required too. Like,
I mean, as long as the world is still here as we know it, then I think the answer is yes.
Yeah.
But it's also entirely plausible that, you know, we'll blow ourselves up or something, or there'll be a total reset, as there's probably been many, many times throughout civilization, right? They found a hand axe factory in Ethiopia that they estimate is 1.2 million years old.
Yes.
So, you know, if you think about that,
yes,
civilization got to a point where it wasn't an individual making a hand axe for personal use. It was a factory where they were assembling hand axes. So civilization got to a point 1.2 million years ago where we were that far along. There's nothing in our history, no knowledge of that. We go back a few thousand years. So, you know, maybe there was some kind of reset or something, some nuclear holocaust or something that like annihilated the planet and we started again or something. I don't
know. It's probably the CO2 levels from the hand axe factory that...
Exactly. You got to be careful with those CO2 levels, man. You got to be very careful about our energy usage.
Oh, well, yeah. What a time to be alive.
The show is sponsored by Amber App, the number one Bitcoin exchange in the Southern Hemisphere.
And the reason we partnered with Amber App is the people that work there, especially Izzy, my favorite hippie.
If you haven't seen it already, check out our episode with Izzy. It'll show you exactly why we just had to partner with Amber App.
Izzy focuses on the orange glowing light, and so do we. And we think you should too.
Amber App will be launching their version 2.0 soon and rolling out globally. They'll be including a non-custodial on-chain wallet, an anonymous Lightning wallet, a fiat wallet, and an exchange all in one. It's going to be a super app.
It's like WeChat, but without the CCP.
So stay tuned, follow Amber App on X, and check out their website for more information at amber.app. Next up, Wasabi Wallet, the privacy by default, open source, non-custodial Bitcoin wallet with CoinJoin built in. It's the easy-to-use, comprehensive, affordable way to make your coins private.
Ooh! If you want the privacy of your Bitcoin, don't be an idiot samurai! Use a Wasabi Wallet now!
So check out wasabiwallet.io and download Wasabi today.
Yeah, but I do think that, for example, if a country like Turkey, okay, that's still able to issue Turkish lira and sell bonds and do things of that nature, if they were to issue, you know, billions of dollars worth of, you know, national debt, and they took the entire proceeds of it and they bought Bitcoin, they could start to back their currency, back the Turkish lira with Bitcoin, and it might just save the Turkish lira, which is otherwise doomed.
Yeah, that's so fascinating though, because like that is, you know, there's no such thing as intrinsic value, as you know, but this is like such a weird abstract mind experiment with something that is just mathematics and communication. Backing something that is just like, I have a difficulty seeing how people wouldn't choose to self-custody Bitcoin instead of, you know, using the lira backed by it.
They may, but if, you know, every Turkish lira was, you know, backed by 1,000 sats and one Turkish lira was equal to 1,000 sats, the Turkish lira would maintain value and have value as Bitcoin had value.
Yeah. Except you can do fractional on the lira, but not on the Bitcoin base layer. So you could say that they're redeemable for this, but you could still do fractional reserve banking, right?
Yes.
In a way you can't on the base layer.
Correct. So correct. Yeah, the government can still screw you.
Yeah.
Right? Essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my point is, they're completely screwed now. Like, it's obvious to anyone that the Turkish lira is going the way of the Argentine peso, right? Or Venezuelan currency, right? So they can try to do something. This would be something good that would help. All of a sudden, you know, if they were honest about it and they didn't screw you, and a Turkish lira was backed by some number of sats, people would want to, I would want to hold Turkish lira. I'd be like, wow, the Turkish lira is trading cheap right now to the number of sats it's backed by. There's some level of trust, you know, that maybe the government's going to honor it and really keep it. I'll stack some Turkish lira.
Do you think they have any incentive to do so, though? Like, why would the government do that?
Well, every time, you know, a currency, you know, a fiat currency goes to zero, it's not good for the nation state.
No, of course.
So I guess that's their incentive, is take a shot. Like, what is it? If death is inevitable, you try a lot of things. And by the way, it can happen at a municipal level. It doesn't have to be a national level. You could have like the state of New York, you know, or New York City could issue bonds and buy Bitcoin with the proceeds. It worked out really well for MicroStrategy. Why wouldn't it work out well for a municipality or a nation state?
No.
Maybe I'm getting them. Maybe I'm a little lost on the math here a little bit, though. But when a currency is already hyperinflating, it's a bit of a risky game, right? To try and catch it, to inflate further to buy the Bitcoin, right? Like, is there some risk?
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
of course. There's a little bit of, there's risk, but you're going to die. Like, you're in critical condition, right? So it depends, like, how high will Bitcoin go, right? If you're diluting yourself now, essentially, and inflating the currency now, but Bitcoin 1,000x is from where we are, and you inflate your currency by, 100x, you're still going to get massive benefit.
Right. So the point is to get some backing in Bitcoin. It sort of tether it to a specific level, and then that level can stay somewhat stable.
Right now, the Turkish lira has no backing, right? Like the full faith and credit of the Turkish government, which is worth what?
They have more faith than credit, I think. So
that's good, yes.
Speaking of fiat currencies, like right now, Bitcoin is at an all-time high in a lot of fiat currencies, yeah. Including the currency I grew up with, the Swedish krona, and also in the Norwegian krona. So it's,
yes.
Because the Swedish krona lost 40% against the dollar in the last 10 years. And people in the country, like, no one talks about this. Everyone's oblivious to it.
Yes.
They don't realize what that means.
Right.
But what it basically means is that you guys, well, not you personally,
yeah.
But the Fed printed stuff.
Correct.
And stole all our stuff.
That's
like
right.
That's what's going on, right?
That's exactly
so,
right.
So what do you think about these smaller national currencies? Are they, how close to hyperinflating are they in your view?
I'm not a macroeconomist, but it is clear that every currency is doing worse than the dollar, and the dollar is doing poorly against truly scarce hard assets as well. So it's just devastating. How long it takes. I mean, there's 140 or something now, fiat currencies. In 100 years, you know, I'd be surprised if there's more than 40. So, you know, what the timetable is, I don't know, but governments aren't going to stop. There's no way to stop.
No.
People are power hungry. Politicians are power hungry, almost, you know, to a person. There's very few exceptions, right? And they've learned that they get elected by promising people shit that the government can't afford. And this is what they, and it's
true
not
that.
Unique to a particular political party. Some are worse than others, but at the end of the day, they all spend money they don't have. And that cycle continues, and the government can try to misdirect, all governments can try to misdirect us that there's some other cause of the inflation, whether it's Putin's war or greedy companies or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, it's money supply. And they're not slowing down the increase of money supply.
No.
I mean, they are slowing it down just because it was so hyper crazy, but it's not stopped.
The way I see it is like the urge for there to be a free lunch is the root cause of all human problems almost.
Yes. And also like the lag is what causes the problem, right? It's you can do this on your watch. The negative effects of what you've done happen one chapter later. So you, the individuals that did this, aren't going to get immediately killed for doing it. It's the next group that comes in that's going to bear the burden.
That's one of the inherent problems with democratic systems. Like they don't, you're not incentivized as a politician to think long term. So that's why these narratives around monarchies being better long term is popping up in the Bitcoin space.
Yeah, I mean, one of those things on that topic that always stuck with me is I have a friend who's in the selling defense related stuff.
Uh-huh.
And they sell to like basically every nation state in the world. And they were talking to China, actually. And the Chinese said, yeah, we're interested. And he came back to him like a year later and he's like, you know, we're interested, but we're not interested like now, soon though. And he said, well, what do you mean soon? And he's like, yeah, you know, come back to us in like 25, 30 years. So they're thinking in 100-year cycles, whereas the United States government is thinking in, you know, 2 to 4 year terms,
yeah.
Right? And it's just a very different perspective.
Very much so.
Advantage, you know, monarchies or dictatorships.
Yeah.
The U.S. Congress 2-year cycle, I think, has got to be the worst almost in the whole world in terms of just this churn, right? The entire lower house has to be reelected every 2 years. How do you get anything done? That system just seems crazy.
I think getting stuff done is overrated, but but yeah, it's clearly a broken system. And the fact that like a senator serves one term and they get their salary for life is absolutely ridiculous. There are so many broken things about the U.S. system. I mean, the very fact that they're not subject to the same rules that they create for the rest of the world, like Obamacare was another. It's like, hey, this healthcare system is good for you, entire country. Oh, but members of Congress, we have our own. We're not subject to that nightmare. It's just, you know, very, very messed up. There's a lot of misincentives and misalignment in all government, and the U.S. is no exception.
Yeah. That's like the clown world we see everywhere, that the same rules do not apply to, like, and it should be so obvious in this interconnected world that we live in 2024, like, why don't the same laws apply
to all people? Yeah, rules for thee, but not for me, right?
Yeah.
It's like California lockdown, right? Like, nobody can go anywhere. And then Gavin Newsom's at, like, you know, Thomas Keller's restaurant, like, having dinner. It's like, really? Like, this is your state, you idiot. You can't even, like, follow your own mandates. It's amazing. Just the arrogance is amazing.
Late stage lockdowns were an interesting time, because I flew quite a lot then, and you've seen different airports having different rules. So in one airport, nobody gives a shit. And right. In another, everyone's wearing the double diapers and whatever.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah.
And it was also not particularly commonsensical, right? I mean, there was one situation where they wouldn't let us leave a country. I was with some friends, and they wouldn't let us leave a country unless we had COVID tests and proof of this and proof of that, right? But we were getting on a friend's airplane, and we were leaving the country on our own airplane by ourselves. If anybody on that airplane had anything, you want us leaving your country. Like, exporting us is the best thing you can do without risking any other people, right? And it's like, it's
not
just
for the other country, though.
Yeah, well, but it wasn't them that cared. It was the people that wouldn't let us leave.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, where's the thought? There's like no thought process whatsoever. No. It's just, you know, government regulation overreach, massive overreach.
It showed us how common sense is not very common.
But it did shake up a lot of people. And one of the benefits of that was, you know, I've been talking about Bitcoin a lot since 2013, and Saylor wasn't particularly receptive to hearing about it. He's running a company with a couple thousand people, fighting the likes of Microsoft and Salesforce every day. And it was only because of that lunacy and the world not making sense that I was able to, you know,
oh, really?
Get through to him at that time. Yeah.
So that played such a huge part in that.
100%. It was the only reason he was receptive.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he remembers I said something to him like, we were at his house quarantining there because it's very comfortable.
I would quarantine there too if I had the option.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Better, much better than my apartment. Not that my apartment's not great, but his place is spectacular. So we were the two of us were kind of hanging out, quarantining there every day, and trying to make sense of what was happening in the world. Stock market going up while every business is closed and the world is coming to a stop. And unbeknown to me, he was very concerned about MicroStrategy's situation, having $500 million in cash and, you know, thinking inflation is taking away 10% of this $50 million a year. I'm losing in purchasing power. And meanwhile, 2,000 people are working for his company in the hopes that the company makes $50 million a year. And it's like a treadmill, right? Just like you're never going to get anywhere. So he was looking for stores of value. I didn't know that part. And then when I brought up Bitcoin, I said to, he remembered me saying something like, anytime there's a paradigm shift, you know, like this, there's opportunity. We just have to find the opportunity.
Yeah.
And then I didn't connect the two, but I started talking about Bitcoin again, because that's what we do, right? And this time, instead of dismissing the conversation, Michael said, tell me more about that. And I was like, what? And so that's how we started, and then spent, I don't know, the better part of a few weeks talking about Bitcoin. And that's how it started.
That's a fantastic, and like, Michael is not the only intelligent person in the world.
No.
I'm sure there are plenty others that have like had similar stories that they might not be as vocal about it, but these things are happening everywhere. And that's what I thought when I left my last fiat position and back in Sweden, like I'm the dork here in this office that goes around being a maniac. And, but
I know the feeling.
But there are plenty like me, and we're all around the world. So when you go to these conferences and it's meetups, it feels small, but we're everywhere. Like, it is really, I mean, every little one horse town in any country.
It's all about individuals. I don't want to steal too much from Michael's presentation in a couple hours, but at the end of the day, everything is comprised of individuals, whether it's government, corporations, families. And so everything is at the individual level, right? So you, when I orange-pilled, for lack of a better term, Sailor, right? I was talking to my friend as a one-on-one thing, but he had a company, yeah. right? And I wasn't trying to orange-pill MicroStrategy. I was just trying to explain to my really smart friend why this is cool and perhaps yeah. really meaningful. And then he's part of a company. He's got political views. He's got whatever he's got. And so it's one individual impacts all these different areas. So at the end of the day, everything comes down to one-on-one communication or education and individuals.
Yeah. And that's such a beautiful, that's what Bitcoin points out to people. Because at the end of the day, the Bitcoin are the people. Like,
correct.
We have, if you have a private key or know the location of it, it's in your head.
Yes.
So effectively, you are the Bitcoin. So it's about us and it's about us as individuals. Beautiful.
It's true, man. It is beautiful. The other thing is it requires a lot of either courage or confidence in oneself yeah. to see Bitcoin. You know, it's like your friend can tell you about Bitcoin. Someone can tell you this is cool stuff. And you can think, okay, this person's really smart. I respect them. I like them. Maybe I'll get some Bitcoin. And then you live through some Bitcoin cycles, but it goes down 50%. And it's almost impossible for you to have the conviction in this because your smart friend, you know, has conviction in this. You've got to do your own work and your own research. And if you've put in the time and you've spent, you know, 1,000 hours looking into this, then when it goes down, if you really have conviction, a la Warren Buffett with the stocks that he invests in, right? When it goes down, you're happy.
Yeah.
It's a really weird concept. People don't believe it when we say it, but you're like, oh shit, I can get more for less.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a great experience because you're so confident in where it's going. Like selling when it goes down is not, you know, it's not even a thing. Right. So it's just a very different mindset, but it only comes from the confidence and self-security to do your own research.
That's not to say that we're not all super excited when it pumps, but
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, there's the price in fiat terms, as I see it, is also like, it's the best thing we have to as a proxy for adoption.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, you know, because it's supply demand, and when we see demand, it means we're winning in the sense that more people are adopting it. And that's what's super exciting about it. You know, the fact that I'm never going to sell my Bitcoin does make some of those questions at the beginning a little more challenging. Like, well, how am I going to do the nice stuff that I want to do for my life or the family that I don't currently have and like, you know, whatever else down the road or whatever material things I may want or whatever. And like, we'll figure that out. But right now, like, that's not the concern. It's like, let's get there first. Let me see, you know, Bitcoin 500,000. Let me see us at least equal gold. I think the clearest analogy and clearest path for Bitcoin in my mind and the most constructive narrative, going back to what we said about kind of pitting Bitcoin against a fiat currency, I think that's like really counterproductive and maybe unnecessary, right? For Bitcoin to hit 600,000 in US dollar terms, that's just the equivalent of gold, yeah. right? $12 trillion, right? And so every time in history that a digital successor has gone after an analog predecessor, it hasn't equaled it. It's like crushed it. Whether you think of like automobiles versus, you know, like horse and buggies or mobile phones versus rotary phones, this is Bitcoin versus analog gold, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, let's get to 600,000 of Bitcoin, right? And then let's see what happens. If it goes to 10x that, right? And we're at 6 million of Bitcoin, these other things are going to take care of themselves. We don't need to fight those battles now. Let's just fight the battle of being a digital gold, which nobody's threatened by. Everybody accepts. No nation state is concerned. If you want to be a digital gold, that's great. You start talking about taking out their fiat currency, you're going to get holy hell from that nation state.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd rather just be a digital gold.
Yeah, yeah. Gold is just Bitcoin for boomers, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's so right.
It goes away with that generation.
100%. Only unlike other technologies and things, we don't have to wait for that generation to die completely because people can dip a toe, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They can do a 1% allocation, even though yeah. it's like you know, they'll call it schmuck insurance. They'll be like, all right, these kids may be right. And this is what a lot of my investors do. You know, these are, you know, big family offices with many, many hundreds of millions of dollars. And they're like, okay, my son, my grandson, this, that, whatever. They keep talking about it. Now it's on CNBC. Now the SEC approved it. It's like, okay, you know what? Let's get a few million dollars worth of that stuff just in case my kid is right. You know, that's how it starts.
Interesting. You used the word schmuck there.
Yeah.
I saw Larry David once explain the difference between a schmuck and a prick. And
what's that?
The difference is that there's no such thing as a rich schmuck, and there's no such thing as a poor prick.
Okay.
It's always the other way around. But I think Bitcoin allows for rich schmucks.
Yes, it does.
That's liberating.
And we should be careful not to become pricks when fiat price goes up.
No. Have fun staying poor
and
pricks.
The show is also sponsored by Orange Pill App, the Bitcoin-only social network where you can stack friends who stack sats. Make local connections and find all the nearby meetups, see what's going on in your area, and connect with Bitcoiners around you. And now, with a brand new merchant section, it's easier than ever to find and connect with local businesses that accept Bitcoin.
The best part about Orange Pill App is that you know that it's high signal because you're paying for Orange Pill App, and so is everyone else. There are no Asian ladies asking you how your trade is going on Orange Pill App because it's not a trading app. It's a dating app. Is it a dating app?
So download the Orange Pill App on Apple or Android, send us a DM, and start building your local network of Bitcoiners.
So how are you finding things on Madeira? I know you just got in, but what's your impression of what's going on so far that you've seen in the last, I don't know, 12 hours?
So the last couple of years of conferences have been great. Bitcoiners are always positive. It's remarkable to me just how positive a group of people we are. And it's always fun to be around Bitcoiners. But I'm really excited for this conference because it's the first one we've had in a long time where price has been up.
Yeah.
And so it does feel good. And it doesn't necessarily feel good because people are like, oh, cool, I'm wealthier now on paper. It feels good because we talk to the people we love. We tell them about Bitcoin, your aunt, your uncle, your brothers, your sisters, your friends, you know, have bought Bitcoin because you've told them to buy Bitcoin. And now, you know, they're in profit. So we're like, okay, good. It's working out for the people that I love, right? So people are in an extra good mood. Everybody's smiling, hugging. Everybody's happy to see one another. And it's just, it's a great feeling. And, you know, as my friend Jared says, we deserve this.
Yeah. That's the feeling I had last night at that reception. It's like, these are all my favorite people in the world in the same room. It's just fantastic, mind-blowing. To be in among such a group of people, it's just, and I think everyone feels the same way. Everyone is almost in tears because of how beautiful the group is.
Well, Bitcoin's a truth network, you know, and so you've got advocates of truth. And when advocates of truth find other advocates of truth, it's a warm embrace, right? Like it's just, you know, everybody's kind of on the side of honesty and fairness and good. And it's a nice group of people to be around.
Yeah, and I think the further we go into them, the more Bitcoin only oriented these conferences become, the more we've weeded out the bad seeds, and it's like we've boiled down this wonderful beef stock. It's just,
what do you mean? As a, who are we? What do you mean, like shitcoiners and stuff like that?
Yeah, shitcoiners and stuff like that. They're like, if you go back 5 years, there were a lot more shitcoiners at these events.
I'm of the belief that there are no bad holders of Bitcoin and there are no wrong ways to hold Bitcoin. I'm a freedom maximalist. And if someone wants to hold, you know, some Bitcoin and a bunch of shit coins and a bunch of stocks and a bunch of real estate and a bunch of fiat currency, awesome. It's better than them doing that and not holding Bitcoin.
Everything's good for Bitcoin type.
Everything's good for Bitcoin, but also, like, you know, I just, It's always been something that's been a little perplexing to me, is how Bitcoiners can be such advocates of freedom, but then also want to dictate how people should Bitcoin.
No. I'm not saying we want to do that, dictate how anyone else should
live.
From
an enjoyment point of view,
From just the quality of event type perspective.
Absolutely. It's great. It's great to be around like-minded people who are all happy and cheerful. But I do see a lot on X, not at all from you, just like in general from you know, a lot of this toxicity of the maximalist, you know, whether it's ETF related or, you know, all of these institutions, all of these different holders of some kind, they do bring something of value to Bitcoin. And we know that Bitcoin brings tremendous value to them. And I think, you know, in my mind, it's all holders are welcome. You know, if Putin wants to hold Bitcoin, man, awesome, dude. Like, you know, hold it. Well, there are no bad holders.
No. More importantly, that's not up to any one of us. And that's
correct
by design. That's the beauty of the system.
But the other beauty of it is they have no more influence, right? Like, Saylor with all his Bitcoin, you know,
no,
by virtue of holding the Bitcoin has no more influence, which is a thing of beauty.
Yeah. That's not true for the dollar.
Correct.
At all.
Political influence is purchased.
Anyway, like, where can people find you online? Like, what are you currently working on? Like, anything
I'm
you want?
I'm on Twitter or X or whatever it's called these days. And I think my Twitter is...
Yeah, it's Twitter. Let's be honest. It's Twitter.
I call it Twitter, but, you know, still want to... Whatever Elon wants to call it is fine with me.
Yeah.
But what am I? I'm Eric_BIG Fund. Bitcoin Investment Group Fund.
Yeah. So it's not just that the fund is big.
The fund is unfortunately not as big as we would like it to be, but it's an acronym for Bitcoin Investment Group.
Oh, that's good.
So, and then really what I'm just working on is just, you know, education, explaining to folks that are interested. I'm no longer explaining to folks that aren't interested. So that's been a big change. I wouldn't phrase it in terms of like, I no longer have the time or patience, but there are enough people that want to know that are genuinely curious. And I focus my efforts in those groups as opposed to trying to convert people who are opposed to it. And in some way, I'm actually like content for them not to get it.
Yeah.
Let them fall into the everyone gets Bitcoin at the price they deserve camp.
Exactly. Like, you either take the orange pill now or the orange suppository later. That's the choice you got.
I so badly wanted to tweet that once, and I had another version of it, and I just thought, I can't do that. That's a little too off-brand. I just can't do it. But I wanted to.
All right. Eric, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
And great to have you in Europe. And good luck with everything.
Great to be with you guys.
This has been the Freedom Footprint Show. Thanks for listening.
Yes, if you can't see Luke, this has been the Freedom Footprint Show. Press the goddamn like button and, you know, brush your teeth and all that.
Oh, yeah, we're keeping that in. Cheers
to you.
Thanks again, Eric.
Where do I look?
Yes.